Before we get to the consent agenda, I believe it's important to conclude our business from yesterday. And so if we can, I'd like to take up item 5, Justice Baxter, the Judicial Council legislative priorities that we addressed very briefly yesterday afternoon, and would invite Kurt Child and Donna Hershkovitz, if she's present, to present that. Oh, I understand Donna returned to Sacramento yesterday afternoon. Thank you.
Chief and members of the council, as I recall, we had completed the discussion on the budget issue, and we're transitioning into Kurt's presentation on 1208. And as I also recall, there was a request to handle each recommendation separately. Is that correct?
That's correct. I also believe council received, before the conclusion of our meeting, the amended language to recommendation number 1. And unless I hear otherwise, I just assume that all council members have that in their possession. And I wonder, as part of recommendation number 1, whether it's fruitful for us to discuss this at this time, if there's any inquiries, amendments, or questions about the amended language that is now is in lieu of the language now in part in recommendation number 1 on page 2 of this item in your binder.
Chief, just to move it, then I would move that we adopt the amended language. And with a second, then we can go forward with discussion.
Yes. Thank you.
I would second.
Thank you. Ms. Mathias seconds. Any discussion?
Just in the way of background, Chief, as I understand it, the amended language came from the Office of General Counsel to reconfirm the practice that has been followed in the past.
Thank you. And all in favor of the motion made by Judge Herman, seconded by Ms. Mathai regarding recommendation number 1 as amended, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Recommendation number 1 is approved. Thank you. Kurt, you can start on recommendation number 2.
Thank you, Chief. As you all know, AB 1208 is sponsored by the Alliance of California Judges, and it's authored by Assemblymember Charles Calderon. It's quite a sweeping measure, and I know this is certainly not the first time we've all had the opportunity to discuss it, but it's quite a sweeping measure, which the position, I think, previously of the council through the policy committee has been that it intrudes upon the manner of how the judicial branch governs itself, and that's essentially the direction that we've taken forward in our communications with the legislature and the committees and with individual members. The policy committee's taken opposed position to all versions of this bill, and that it is currently in its third version as it sits on the assembly floor right now. As it's been authorized previously, the policy committee has taken the position, as we do in non-judicial council-sponsored legislation. However, I think because of the significance of this issue and now the timing, as it works, the policy committee believed it was important to bring the position back to the judicial council with the recommendation that the council actually continue to oppose the legislation, both in its current form or if the form is substantially similar, if it is amended on the floor next month when it has to be taken up. I just wanted to remind the council of a couple things on this legislation. And the first part is a bit of the tortured history, I think, that it's been through as it was going through the Assembly Committee process. The bill was introduced very early in January without any opportunity or any communication with either the sponsors of the legislation or with the author of the legislation. So it was introduced without the opportunity to comment on the bill, despite, I think, a number of efforts to try and do that. The Chief Justice met with the author, actually, a couple of times before the bill was introduced, but we had not had an opportunity to see the language. And then as it started down this course, as you all may recall, it got referred quite strangely, I might suggest, to the Accountability Committee, which is a committee in the Assembly, a select committee that was not authorized by their own rules to hear bills. But once it was referred to that committee, instead of the Judiciary Committee, that committee amended its rules to hear bills. And so over the course of a few weeks, as we were having discussions, and certainly we were opposed to that bill being diverted from the usual process of going through the Judiciary Committee quite late, as it was getting close to the bill deadline. The bill was it was going to be referred to both the Accountability Committee and the Judiciary Committee, and then 2 days before the bill deadline and the hearing, it was referred to just Judiciary Committee. And then the evening before the bill was heard, it was substantially amended. And again, no opportunity to see any amendments. And in fact, the amendments that were proposed were draft concept amendments, and that's what the Judiciary Committee actually heard was comments. And in the summary of the bill that we passed out yesterday, essentially the first three provisions were those that ended up in the concept in the bill as it was drafted. At that point, a number of council members were there, participated in the hearing before the Judiciary Committee. Judge Friedman testified on behalf of the council. I think Edith was there testifying and, with the defense counsel and others in opposition. In the end, the bill came out a little differently than was being proposed, but with a couple of those provisions, 2 and 3, in the bill. Another unusual twist in that bill was once it left the Judiciary Committee, much of what was taken out of the bill as it was originally introduced and which was considered by the Judiciary Committee got reinserted back into the legislation. Again, without any opportunity generally for the council to comment on those before it happened. Generally what happens, a policy committee will pull a bill back into committee to hear those amendments before sending it to the floor, and that did not happen. The bill then moved on onto the floor, as you all know, there was significant opposition to the legislation. It was really quite a broad array of opposition. Included in this case the consumer attorneys and the California Defense Council in a joint letter opposing it, the chamber, CJAC, hundreds of individual judges that had signed on to letters, a number of courts. And in the end, as this was eligible to be heard on the floor, it was not taken up by the bill deadline. We believe that the reason it was not taken up was because it didn't have the votes to actually get off the floor at that time, and so was then made a two-year bill. As a two-year bill, it has to move off of the Assembly floor by January 31st, and from all reports, that we hear, it is going to be the intent of the sponsors and the author to move the bill off of the floor. I've heard, and again, sort of consistent with sort of the track history of where we've been with this bill, that there will be some amendments on the floor to it. We haven't seen those yet, if there are to be. So it could change from the version that I've handed out to all of you. But we'll have to wait and see. I just wanted to also remind the council members and in the materials that we handed out yesterday, some of the key amendments that were put back into the bill, and as the bill now reads, the bill would require the council to allocate 100% of the funds appropriated for a trial court operation according to each court's share of their statewide operational funding. This was a provision that was expressly rejected by the Judiciary Committee and did get put back into the bill after it left the committee. So, in other words, that freezes essentially trial court funding allocations. Excuse me. It also provides that the legislature shall specify in the annual budget act the amounts allocated for any program of statewide concern from the funds for trial court operations. In other words, the legislature would direct any allocation of any trial court dollars that would be used for anything that would be deemed as a statewide initiative or a statewide program. The other provision that was considered by and included as it came out of the Judiciary Committee that would require the council to allocate any funds in the trial court trust fund for information technology or administrative infrastructure would require a two-thirds consent of a proportional representation of the superior courts as determined by the number of judges in the court. And so, in other words, this would give essentially the veto to two or three courts of any statewide, potentially two or three courts of any statewide initiative in the bill if the court, not entirely clear how this would work, but if the court, based on the number of the judges, took the position to oppose that. That, as was presented initially in the Judiciary Committee, had a 75% threshold on that, and that's what's dropped down to that two-thirds provision that's in the bill now. That's one I think we have certainly heard a lot about, and a lot of opposition was stated, that the ability of a couple of courts to be able to veto statewide expenditures. The bill also eliminates the authority of the council to, or that's provided in statute now, to express the purpose of promoting statewide efficiency. So, in other words, taking out that language that would be the role of the judicial council. Eliminates the statutory provision declaring the council retains the ultimate responsibility to adopt a budget and allocate funding for the trial courts and perform other activities that best assure their ability to carry out the functions, promote the implementation of statewide policies and promote immediate implementation of efficiencies and cost savings in order to guarantee equal access. So, in other words, that provision comes out. That would no longer be a role of the Judicial Council. Eliminates the ability of the council to direct increased allocations or to mitigate the impact of budget reductions to under-resourced courts or courts with fiscal emergencies, which the council has been engaging in, and we'll hear a little bit more on today with another court. The bill would eliminate that. Finally, would authorize trial courts, once there are allocations made to the trial courts, to essentially transfer funds between any of those allocations. So funds that may be directed for a specific purpose by the council could be moved despite that direction within the trial courts, and that there couldn't be any reallocation or direction redirection without the consent of the court's management. So that's what the bill looks like now as it sits on the floor. Again, there is the great possibility that there will be amendments that may change the approach of that, and we will have to wait and see what those look like. I just also wanted to make sure that the council was aware of the position that we had been taking on this version of the bill. First of all, we were clear that the council was strongly opposed to 1208 because it removes from the council its responsibility and authority to allocate funds to trial courts in a manner that supports the implementation of statewide policies and initiatives. That secondly, it's a inappropriate intrusion into the fundamental governance of the judicial branch. The argument going that this bill goes far beyond what are basic judicial branch funding issues, which are squarely within the purview of the legislature, but moves more into directing how the branch would actually govern and manage itself. And that 1208 would eliminate the authority of the council to transfer funding to finance specific trial court projects or to assist courts that are confronting unanticipated budget shortfalls or other urgent needs. That, again, the one that I've mentioned, I think is an important issue to point out, is that it takes the decision-making authority for funding statewide key projects away from the council and puts it in the hands for as few as two or three courts to ultimately veto. And that, again, the provision that authorizes trial courts to transfer funds allocated between functions, line items, or programs without any oversight or reporting. Such things as would permit a court to transfer funds intended for self-help centers, for complex litigation, for DV or interpreter programs, all of those that may be designated to the trial court. The legislation would authorize trial courts to move those funds between any of those programs to fund any or none of those services. And finally, that we had continued to advocate that this bill was really given or was introduced without giving the chief and the council, but particularly the chief, an opportunity to look at, evaluate, and improve the performance of the branch, all of which I would envision these would continue to be the stated position and opposition should the council continue to recommend opposing the bill. Put both of these on your desk along with the copy of the bill. So we would recommend the adoption of the second recommendation in the outline.
Thank you, Kurt. Any comments, questions?
I move adoption of recommendation number
second.
Okay, so Judge Freeman makes the motion, seconded by Judge Herman and Judge O'Malley. Any further comment or discussion? Judge Moss.
I second also.
Thank you. 3 seconds. Any further discussion? Miriam Krinsky and then Judge D'Alba.
Kurt, just a couple of questions and then just one brief comment on a particularly troubling part of it, but the version that you put in front of us that's got a February date, is that the version that is on the floor but not the version that went to committee? I understand that committee saw a trimmed-down version. What's now on the floor is a more expanded version, but this one seems to be perhaps predator to both of those, or is it the version that's currently on the floor?
So what you should have before you is the May 18th, 2011 version.
Okay. All right.
And that is the version that is on the floor right now. Okay. That's correct.
And then I know that we've received some communication from the Alliance reflecting support for the bill by a number of trial courts, the plebiscite of the California Judges Association. And again, I could be wrong, and I don't know if you know or others know, but it was my understanding that the version that a number of courts and even CJA have supported was a much more trimmed-down version, that it wasn't that many of those courts and CJA actually are troubled by the two-thirds majority vote. And I just, is that assumption correct? Because I think we've been told that there's resounding support for the bill, but what the bill is has been such a moving target that I just want to be sure that we're operating from a valid set of assumptions. And I think the resounding support for the bill is very different from what's now on the assembly floor, correct?
That's correct. And again, the version that's on the floor that happened very quickly in the Judiciary Committee that inserted the two-thirds provision was not the one that was out largely. It was not the one that was available at the time that, for example, CJA did its plebiscite. As well.
And really doesn't even seem to be what the Alliance report talks about. They're talking about a much more trimmed-down version of the bill, not what's on the Assembly floor.
I can't speak to exactly. Okay. I mean, as the sponsors of the legislation, I presume they know what their legislation is and which one is on the floor.
At least in the document that they supplied all of us. That, you know, it has a lengthy discussion, but it's a lengthy discussion of a very small part of what's on the floor, not all of the expanded provisions that, you know, are currently in the bill.
Again, I'm not quite sure if they are sort of explaining that way. Again, they know which bill is on the floor, and that's the the 18th.
But not with their document rest.
I think that, Miriam, that maybe suggests how they're characterizing the legislation that's on the floor right now.
I just wanted to speak to one part of it, and I realize because this is a moving target that it may change dramatically, and I would hope that if and when that happens, that we'll have a chance to reengage and discuss it anew. But certainly in the current iteration, obviously I think it's self-evident much of what's troubling with the bill, and Kurt and the documents have recounted it. A piece of it that I just wanted to underscore are the provisions that really make vulnerable some of what's so critical for those in the state who least have access to the court system, namely children, those who are so dependent on some of our equal access self-help programs. And I think that piece of the current version of the bill that takes those issues out of the Judicial Council's purview and puts them at the mercy of the legislature and disables us from doing what we've done in past years, which is really struggle with and ensure that children and others in our community who have least ability to advocate for themselves before the legislature will still have an accessible system of justice. I find that incredibly troubling, and I know that we've struggled mightily with making ends meet, but I think we've always tried to do so without having it come at the expense of children and others who aren't going to have political clout. So I really worry about and question whether, you know, those in the Alliance and others who have supported parts of this bill for whatever reason really would want to see that population potentially dramatically harmed by that part of the bill. So I just wanted to underscore that as something to keep our eye on.
Miriam, if I could say, our analysis of the provision that would allow trial court to move funds for which they're allocated. Our analysis would suggest that the allocation for dependency counsel could actually be moved into other areas within the court should the court decide to do that. So despite what might be a council decision in allocating those funds to dependency, the trial court would be free to move those between any and all of their trial court funds.
Right, which again, I think takes an issue that this body has been willing to prioritize and puts it at the mercy of, you know, some of the machinations that can happen, you know, at other levels of decision-making. And that really worries me for something that we've tried very hard through the work of the Blue Ribbon Commission and other contexts to make sacrosanct.
Judge Diablo, then Judge Rosenberg, then Senator Evans.
Thank you, Chief. I just have a comment. In the written materials that were provided to us, there is a letter that's addressed to Justice Baxter, dated December 9, from the Alliance of California Judges, that notes, as Council Member Krinsky noted, that various trial courts around the state support the legislation, and amongst them, well, there are six of them noted, and amongst them are the Sacramento Court. As a member of the bench of the Sacramento Court, I just would like it known that there was never any formal proposal placed before the Sacramento bench to endorse or sponsor or support in any form AB 1208, much less any discussion amongst the judges of that bench, and certainly no recorded vote or motion offered to support this legislation. And in fact, to the contrary, approximately a third of our bench earlier this year notified the author of the legislation that that was so. So it's perplexing to see a letter from the directors of the Alliance of California Judges noting that my particular court in Sacramento supports this legislation.
Thank you. Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Well, I sit here as an advisory member of the Judicial Council in my capacity as a presiding judge of my court and as chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee. And I am confident that I can speak to the sentiments of the majority of presiding judges, and I'm confident the majority of judges, trial judges in California. Are there issues that concern trial judges with regard to budgets and other matters in this branch? Certainly there are. But I think it's fair to say that the vast majority of presiding judges and trial judges want to give the new Chief Justice and this new Judicial Council an opportunity to address these issues. The new Chief Justice has been in place less than 1 year and has set in motion a number of initiatives, including the creation of the SEC, which is evaluating a whole series of matters relating to the AOC and otherwise. So I think, in fairness, the majority of trial judges and PJs want to give the new Chief Justice and the Judicial Council the opportunity to deal with issues. And so the opposition by this council as to 1208 seems appropriate. I don't know that anything has changed in that regard. And one final comment. The Constitution of California does envision a role, an important role for the Judicial Council, but also envisions a decentralized system where trial courts retain a measure of independence. That, as I've said before, is in many ways inherently inconsistent, but that is the way the structure is built, and we have to work within that structure.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. Senator Evans.
Thank you. Just a comment on the process and then a question. As everybody knows, the bill is in the Assembly at this point. I had heard that there were amendments to it, but nobody seems to know what they are, and nobody seems to be able to find a copy of them, so I haven't seen them. I'm assuming that what I'm hearing about is the amendments that were taken after it came out of the Judiciary Committee in the Assembly, but I don't know. I had heard there were actually more recent amendments than that, which would be surprising.
I have heard the same thing, Senator, okay. that there will be some amendments that would be taken up on the floor on this.
And you don't know what they are either?
I don't.
Okay.
That's
right.
sort of been the course of this legislation,
yes,
I'm sorry to say.
It's had an interesting and circuitous route. But anyway, the point I wanted to make is once it gets out of the Assembly, if it gets out of the Assembly, it then comes into the Senate and it lands in my committee. And I've been very clear I don't support the goals of this bill. So that'll be interesting to see what form it actually comes to me in. But I had been visited very recently by SEIU in my office, and they were expressing their support for the bill, which was new, a new development. And I'm wondering if you have a list of the supporters of the bill at this point. It would be very nice to know who those might be.
I do have, as they were included in the Assembly Judiciary Committee analysis.
Apparently it's picked up support since then.
And so I have not seen any new list of support, including when it was in the committee, and even on the floor, SEIU had not been listed at that point as a supporter of the bill.
Right, and this meeting occurred in November.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new development. but it would be worthwhile exploring who supports. Report is coming on at this point.
Justice Evans, I'm sorry, Senator Evans.
Okay.
Thank you. I have a question. When SEIU came and indicated its support, were they specific about what iteration of the bill they were in support of?
Yes, they were in support of the bill as amended, and I asked for a copy of the amendments, and they didn't have them.
they're in support of something they are not in possession of.
Well, I mean, yes.
Okay.
They're in support of the bill as it will theoretically be amended.
But you haven't seen amendments that, and this has to get off the floor
nor
by January 31st.
Right, and they weren't able to provide me with any of them.
Justice Moore.
Yes, thank you, Chief. I'd just like to add to Judge Rosenberg's comments very quickly, and I appreciate them, and I suspect that what he says is entirely true concerning most fair-minded people wanting to give the Chief and this Council an opportunity to address concerns. And I think the thought that I would add to that is if the Chief had come in January and this Council had for the past year been going forward on business as usual, there may be cause for criticism, but I think that any fair-minded person who is watching and listening can tell that this that the Chief Justice and this Council sees this as a new day. We're trying to identify the things that need to be changed and make those changes, and I think that we have made good progress within the course of 11 months. I expect that progress to continue, and that, I think, should add to the thought behind Judge Rosenberg's comments here, too.
Thank you. Justice Miller.
I wanted to also follow up on Judge DeAlba's comment about the reference in the Alliance letter that it's supported by CJA and other members of the judiciary. However, that survey also indicated that I believe over 80% of those who responded to the survey felt that the issues dealing with the judicial branch needed to be dealt with by the judicial branch. And I believe that we have been doing that since January 1st. The Chief formed the SEC committee, inquired of all the judicial branch of any concerns they had with regards to governance. And since then, as we all know and as we've made public, we've been meeting on a significant number of dates talking about those exact concerns and dealing with those exact concerns and making significant changes. And you just have to listen to our meetings and look at our minutes to see our response to some of those concerns. And just listen this afternoon to a presentation that will be made by the A&E committee. So were there concerns, as Judge Rosenberg indicated? Yes. Have we heard those? Yes. And are we making changes within the judicial branch? Yes. And that's the way it should be done.
If there is no further discussion, I believe the motion's been made and seconded three times. All in favor of recommendation number two, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Abstain.
Recommendation is approved. That brings us to recommendation number three.
Thank you, Chief. The final two recommendations in the report in front of you relate to new judgeships and the conversion of vacant SJO positions to judgeships. First, as it relates to the new judgeships, as you're well aware, we've been engaging in repeated and continuing efforts to secure the most critically needed 150 new judgeships. In 2006, the council was successful in having the first 50 judgeships authorized and funded and appointed. And in 2007, the second set of 50 judgeships were authorized, and funding was initially provided, but then delayed and now simply not provided. So the second set of judgeships authorized but not funded. And we have continued to, the council continued to pursue legislation to get the third set of 50 judgeships authorized. And so most recently this year, the council sponsored AB 1405 to authorize those judgeships. A decision was not to made, was made not to move that bill ahead this year, but would be eligible to move ahead next year. As you heard yesterday in the discussion on new judicial case weights, California's judicial branch currently suffers from a significant shortage of judgeships, more than 345 judges. And despite the recommendation, the recommendation that the council's primary legislative agenda item this year be the budget, PCLC recommends nonetheless that the council continue to pursue the creation of the third set of 50 new judgeships in light of the magnitude of the problem that we're facing. I'm sure we will have the conversations with the legislature about the ability to do that in light of funding situation as it is in Sacramento, but I think the committee believes that it is important to continue to keep the need for new judgeships before the legislature, and we'll have the discussion, I think, as the broader part of the budget discussion.
Any questions or comments?
I'll move recommendation number three.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg, seconded by Judge O'Malley. Any further comment or discussion on recommendation number three? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Matter recommendation is approved. Recommendation number four.
So turning to now to the issue of conversions of vacant SJO positions, as you know, existing law allows the conversion of 162 of those positions to judgeships, capped at a maximum of 16 per year. And so from 2007 and 8 through 2011, the council had converted the full 16 authorized positions each year. So beginning with the 11-12 fiscal year, effective January 1, 2012, the council's authorized to convert up to an additional 10 SJO positions if the conversions result in a judge being assigned to family or juvenile law assignment previously to being assigned to an SJO. So far for the 11-12 fiscal year, the council's converted 13 of the initial 16 authorized conversions, plus an additional two related to family and juvenile law assignments. So in total, the council's converted 79 of the 162 positions authorized for conversion, leaving 83. The committee's recommending that the council once again seek appropriate language in the budget act or separate legislation, whichever might be appropriate, for the conversion of the 16 plus the 10 SJO positions for the 12-13 year.
Thank you. Any questions, comments?
I have a comment.
Yes, Commissioner Alexander.
I just want to make a point with regards to the 10 with family law is that there is a standard in California that brand-new judges not be the ones assigned to family law. And my concern is in doing this, the brand-new judge is getting assigned to family law or juvenile, and that is taking the place that they can do the extra conversions and take away people that are experienced in family and juvenile, which tend to be some of the, many of the commissioners around the state. So I just want to point out that I would like it to be clear that they're not appointing the brand new judge that just got assigned to these assignments in place of the commissioners that know the assignments.
Thank you. Chief?
Yes.
I would move to adopt recommendation 4.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? Recommendation number 4, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Recommendation number 4 is approved. I believe...
And Chief, as I indicated yesterday, after the policy committee had formulated these recommendations, another very, very important issue has received a great deal of attention, although it's in a sense, a very moving target at this point. The issue of pension reform, I think, is one that certainly deserves the attention of the policy committee and the judicial council. I took the liberty of discussing the matter with Judge Rubin in his capacity as president of CJA, and I believe Judge Rubin has a motion to make at this point.
Yes, Judge Rubin.
Thanks, Chief. Right. Along with Kurt and CJA's legislative advocate, Mike Pelote, I went up and watched the conference committee discussions about the pensions back at the beginning of December. Obviously, this is an issue about which CJA has great interest. And I think that I know that you have a full plate there with the legislative agenda, but if we could add to it the pension proposals as they're moving around, I'd like to move that the council authorize to add to your legislative agenda monitoring the pension reform proposals as they impact the judicial branch and where appropriate to advocate and to coordinate these efforts with the Judicial Retention and Recruitment Working Group and with CJA.
Second. I'd also second.
Okay. That's Judge Wesley and Judge Herman second. And you'll get that language as indicated. We've captured it on the record, but I'd like also to have it noted thereafter in our minutes and for distribution to council members. Any discussion? I realize these are exactly as you described them. They are pension proposals.
First of all, I thank Judge Rubin for doing it as president of CJA and having been there, and Judge Friedman also. It's really a very important function of CJA, and I really appreciate it. Secondly is, Jerwig, Marianne, going to help me on this one? Jerwig has been meeting and
you mean
about
Judicial Recruitment and Retention Working Group?
I'd like to move. We got a new acronym.
Okay. Has been meeting and discussing the fact I think there's a meeting on tomorrow this afternoon. So I think between Judicial Council and CJA and everything, we've got a handle on this, and I think we're making doing the proper thing to solve these problems.
Thank you. Yes, Judge Friedman.
It's important to see the unity that's expressed in opposition to the idea of extending the pension reform proposals to the judicial branch, especially in light of our discussion of a few recommendations ago with regard to AB 1208. Without bringing that whole matter back up again, what of the many things that is concerning about that legislation is that at a time that the branch needs to be fully unified to try to resist the prospect of imposing these pension reform measures on the branch, there is division on what I think are extraneous matters by some judges who need to think a little more carefully about what really matters. And if if the judges of the state, as I believe they do, are rightfully concerned about the idea of pension reform extending to the judicial branch, they might want to express that to the alliance and its friends, that perhaps this is not the best time to divide the branch with their own particular agenda, but rather it's a time to come together to try to protect the interests of all members of the branch. Interesting, I can conclude that the alliance, as far as I know, has been silent about the pension reform idea being imposed upon judges. So it makes one wonder where their real priorities lie.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Just a quick comment. I do want to commend Judge Rubin and CJA for moving forward aggressively on this issue. What should not be forgotten in this discussion is that judges, for the most part, are under JRS 2, which is itself a pension reform plan. It is, in fact, pension reform. And I think the authors of proposed initiatives recognize that, in part, by not including judges in their proposals.
Yes. Sorry, Judge Herman.
I just like to recognize Judge Rosenberg, who chairs the CJA Legislative Committee, which is going to be extremely active in its role this year on this
resignation.
Oh, no, you don't.
JRS-3 is not something any of us look for.
No.
Chief, I'd like to just make one comment in support of what Judge Rosenberg and also Judge Friedman have mentioned. During the entire time I've been on the council, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where we've faced a more difficult challenge, especially in terms of the budget. I mean, when we were formulating the priorities, I was very tempted to recommend five priorities: budget, 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 budget. I mean, we are in a very, very difficult situation. And and my message, especially to the younger judges in the state, is this is the time to be unified. And this is not the time for legislators to hear divergent views on collateral issues. This is the time when it's in our best interest as a judicial branch to speak with one voice. So perhaps some of these other divisive issues could be delayed for some time in the future. All I'm saying is that what's on our plate this legislative session is basic survival as an independent branch of government. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Justice Miller.
I just wanted to echo that because I do believe it is so important that with regards to the five priorities on budget that we do speak as a unified branch. On the other issues, bring them to EMP. Let us deal with them. Let us deal with them through the process of the judicial branch, seeking input from the branch and resolving them in a way that keeps that governance within the judges and the judicial branch. But my offer as I go around and speak is the same. Bring it to EMP. You have a concern, you have an issue, bring it to us. Give us the opportunity to solve it within the judicial branch.
Thank you. Ron?
Chief, I just wanted to note that Kim Turner and Alan Carlson have activated a subcommittee of court executives to look at how the proposals would affect the 22,000 court employees out there in addition to the judges and JRS-2. Clearly, has been stated, is already a reformed pension plan, but I don't want the court employees listening or in the audience to think that they're not being looked after in the process as well in terms of how these proposals would affect them.
Thank you. Good point. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor of the motion made by Judge Rubin and seconded say aye.
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 Any opposition? Recommendation number 5 is approved. Thank you, Justice Baxter, Kurt, and Donna for your presentation.